Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
Well, my first guest this morning, Pora Cusack, is the youngest child of the Cusack acting and theatre dynasty. His dad was Cyril Cusack and his mum was Maureen Kiley. Pádraic has led a really interesting life that didn't always point in the direction of the theatre, but that's where he has ended up as a producer. He's bringing a fascinating production to the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival. It's called The Sound Inside. And Pádraic, welcome to studio.
Thank you very much, Miriam. Great to be here.
You're all so alike. I said that to you earlier, like you all look so alike. Listen, you grew up in Dorky. You and your sister, Niamh, I think, were the two youngest in the family. What do you remember of your early years?
I mean, it was like my memory of home was kind of really happy, slightly chaotic and irregular. But it was a great place to live. I mean, Dorky's probably changed, but it was a very safe place. I was always out on my bicycle. And then in the summer, we were always up at White Rock swimming and we'd bring picnics. And my memory is it was always sunny. I'm not sure if it really was, but that's what I like to think. But it was, yeah, it was a lovely upbringing. And my mum was a sort of a really charismatic character and people gravitated towards her. So there were always kind of exciting people coming to the house, visiting. And she was a great cook and kind of storyteller, raconteur. So there was always kind of a buzz in the house. But there was one time and it was the weekend. And I said, so who's coming this way? You know, is there anyone interesting coming this weekend? My mum really told me off. It's not always about interesting people coming, you know. Sort of knuckle down, do some work, do some homework or whatever. But it was kind of exciting. But it's weird as well, you know, at the time you think that's normal. And it's only latterly as you look back and you think, gosh, yeah, that was a wonderful time. We were so lucky. And we were a very close family. My dad was away a lot because of work. So mum, Niamh and I were very tight as a little threesome. Paul, Sinead and Sarah, my older siblings, were off at university or starting to kind of carve their career. So we were sort of a tight little threesome and it was lovely. We had a great time.
And obviously Cyril, your dad, he was extremely talented, extremely accomplished. What was he like when he was at home, though?
Well, I mean, he had a strange upbringing himself, and his stepfather and his mother were actors, and they were in the fit-ups, and they travelled around the country playing in different towns every week. So he would be in digs. So I don't think he really knew how to kind of be a conventional father. And I think all his knowledge of parenting came from books. So he was sort of quite Victorian and he would sit in his study and we would go in and sort of be interviewed and he'd tell us what books we should be reading and then the next week we'd have to come back and do a quick précis of the book that we'd read and stuff like that. So he was quite tough. He was always expecting us to be first. I remember one time I'd done this music competition and I was delighted I'd come second. And he said, who remembers who came second? You know, so it was kind of tough, really. But, you know, it sort of prepares you for life. It toughens you up. But, you know, when you're kind of seven or eight, it's not what you expect. And I've probably been the reverse with my kids. You're always fantastic. You're always terrific. Fifth, that's brilliant.
I think that's the way to do it, though. And you were talking about, you know, you never knew who'd be in the house full of fascinating people. I mean, you had people like Liz Taylor, didn't you, sitting in your kitchen?
I know. So she and my mum got on really, really well. I think both their husbands, Richard Burton and my dad, were drinkers and carousers and they'd go out on the lash, basically. And the two, Liz and mum, would hang out at home and entertain and commiserate. What do we do with these guys? But she was lovely and so down to earth. You know, you would imagine somebody as successful and beautiful and starry as her, you know, would be grand. But she wasn't, you know, she was just lovely. And she was really generous. We were living out in Rome at the time, and she had a place up in Switzerland, in Gstaad. And she said, why don't you all go up there? And she flew us up and put us up, you know, in total luxury. I mean, really unbelievable. So she was incredibly generous as well. Oh. Really lovely woman. Yeah.
Now, you were only 14, weren't you, Borg, when your mum died?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Which was, it was tough. You know, you're never prepared for it, really. Even though my mum had been ill for most of my life, she had a heart condition. And when she was pregnant with me, she had two heart attacks. So they actually didn't expect her to survive the pregnancy. So in a way, we had 14 years that probably we shouldn't have had. So that was all a bonus. But we were very, very close. And so when she died, that was a huge hole in my life, really. Mm. And it's sad now. I wish she'd seen me grown up. I think she'd be amazed at us all that we've, you know, survived, that we've done all right, that we've produced some lovely kids, you know, who would have thought, really? But maybe she's upstairs looking down.
Yeah, she no doubt is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you went to live with another family then, didn't you? Explain this.
I did. So I was at that stage in school that my older siblings thought, is it a good idea to up sticks and move me over to England to a new education system? And there was this family who actually lived just down the road from here on Nutley Road, called the Gaffneys, a family of 9 girls. I mean, it's madness, absolute madness. And they took me in. And like, we knew them, they went to the same school as us. And my mum had been godmother to one of their children, Aoife. But anyway, they took me in and I had a wonderful time. And maybe the dad, Seamus, thought, finally, I have a son, maybe. But they were so warm and generous, and I'd go on holidays with them. And I mean, I think they had maybe 5 bedrooms, but I was given my own bedroom. All the girls then were, you know, it was kind of 3 to a room. It wasn't right. This interloper comes in and he gets his own private bedroom. But anyway, yeah, I was very lucky, and it was wonderful. And I felt completely part of their family. You know, yeah. I wasn't a guest. I was one of 10, really.
Yeah, which is lovely, actually.
It's
yeah.
extraordinary. Yeah.
Now, you didn't always had to be a producer in theatre, because you started off being a really good musician, and I know Niamh was really musical too. And you, I think, did you go to the UK to study the cello?
That's right.
But then you got attacked in the street, and tell us about this.
Yeah, so I was in Manchester. So I'd gone to the Royal Northern College of Music after Trinity in Dublin, and I was studying there, and I was doing some work with the BBC Philharmonic and Orchestra in Manchester. And on my way home from rehearsals, one evening about 9 o'clock, I got mugged. 4 guys set upon me. And first of all, they beat me up, took my wallet, took my watch. And I didn't put up any resistance. I thought, yeah, you know, I've been unlucky, but I'll be fine. And then they took out knives and they stabbed me in the chest twice and then tried to hack off my left arm with a Stanley knife. So it was quite brutal. But they were on a kind of a tirade. They killed 2 other guys in on the same stretch within 20 minutes of my attack. The thing that saved me was a wonderful Irish tweed coat. It was a double-breasted, thick. My mum would have been very proud, a sensible, warm coat on a cold night. Because the 2 stabs to my chest, which were just above the heart, if I'd been in a cagoule or a light, just a shirt, it would have definitely penetrated the heart. So I was incredibly lucky, really. But it was unfortunately such that I couldn't continue my career. I mean, I did physiotherapy for about 2 years after they sewed the arm back together. They were actually going to amputate the arm. I mean, it was kind of extraordinary. These days, you know, you hear of people you know, cutting off a finger and putting it in ice and going to the hospital and it all being sewed back. But this was probably, you know, nearly 40 years ago. So that sort of microsurgery was in its infancy, I think. But they had a lecturer over from Sweden who was specialising in microsurgery. They got him out of bed and he put it all back together. And what was extraordinary, they kept me awake, and then he would say, what do you feel? And I'd say, oh, I feel my middle finger, I feel my thumb. So you know, it was very effective. I have 80% use of it. You wouldn't know on a day-to-day basis, but it just wasn't good enough for music, really.
The attack, did it linger? Did it leave any, like, psychological scars, that level of attack on you or not?
I mean, lots of people said, you know, do you need therapy? And I thought, no, I feel grand. I mean, the funniest bit and the worst bit was, so I got out of hospital. I didn't ring anyone because I knew all my sisters particularly would overreact. So I just thought, I'll wait until I get out of hospital and then I'll let them know that I'm grand. But I rang my dad and I said, you know, I've had this awful attack and this happened, and I was on the street walking home, you know, having got the bus home, hoping that he might send me a check to buy a car. But he'd always wanted me to be a priest. So he said, well, I told you, you should have gone to Maynooth.
That's so funny.
I know. So it didn't land the way I thought it might, you know, with the fat check in the post. But anyway. But yeah, so yeah, then I sort of had to reconcile myself to the fact that I wasn't going to have a career as a performer. And I went into music administration. And so I worked for two concert halls in London, the Festival Hall and the Wigmore Hall, which was wonderful. And then the theatre thing really happened by accident. I was at a party and I met a director and she said, you should work in theatre. And I said, I don't know anything about theatre. And she said, oh, you've lots of transferable skills. There's a job going at my theatre, running the theatre up in Leeds in Yorkshire. You should apply. And I applied and got the job, which was sort of terrifying because I really didn't know what I was doing. So the first year was hard. And then the second year, I thought, I'm starting to get the hang of this. And then by the third year, I thought, actually, I think I'm liking this, and I might be reasonably good at it.
And obviously, which you are, and we'll talk about the play in a sec. When did you find out you had your younger sister, Catherine, who I know you're now really close to?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So it was just after my mum died. All my other siblings knew. But my dad had said, Porrick's too young and he's not ready for this. And I want to tell him when the moment is right. But with my mum dying, I think Niamh thought it might, I don't know, be reported in a newspaper or whatever. And she wanted me to be prepared. So she told me. And in a really sort of caring, loving way. But it was very strange to discover that I had a half-sister that I knew nothing about, and that she was, I think she was probably 9 and I was then about 15. And my dad was then very, very eager for us to get on. And there was this sort of huge pressure on both of us to bond. And in all honesty, we didn't really bond properly until Dad died, because then it was on our terms. And she's terrific. She's lovely. And she's got so many of our family traits, you know. So she's very apologetic and we're always saying, stop saying sorry. But she's lovely. And she's an actor as well. Mm. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Now, listen, this production you're doing, The Pavilion, it's getting super reviews. Tell us about it. It's an older woman, a professor, and a younger man, a student.
Tell That's me. Right. So it's contemporary. The professor, she's a woman in her mid-50s. She's really got nothing in her life other than teaching and literature. She's not married. She hasn't got a partner. She doesn't own a house. She doesn't have a dog or a cat, nothing. Books are her thing. And she was a writer in her own right, but her career really didn't take off as a writer. So she's lecturing in creative writing at Yale University. And then this young sort of maverick, slightly anti-establishment, quite arrogant, ambitious young man comes in as a junior freshman called Christopher Dunn. And she notices him early on because she's done a class, they take a pause. All the kids go out to check their phones, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, and he doesn't. He sits there reviewing his notes. And she's just amazed by this, you know, in this kind of generation, and that he's so focused. And then a couple of days later, he turns up in her office, unannounced, without an appointment. And she said, you know, you've got to make an appointment. There's a protocol. And he said, I don't believe in all of that. I don't believe in emails. You know, you just have to go with the moment. So he's sort of just quite a bit of a rebel, really. But then he tells her that he's writing a novel. And she's kind of amazed that a 20-year-old has material for a novel. You know, you haven't lived. But she's intrigued, and he starts to tell her the story. And she realises he's extraordinary, he's talented, and this is a wonderful story. And basically, there is this meeting of minds, this kind of intellectual romance. It's not romantic, but they're so engaged with each other, and they go on this journey. And what I love about the play, and one of the reasons I think it'll be wonderful in Dublin, is because we love storytelling, we love talking, we love listening to stories, and it's a story within a story. So it's very, very accessible. And the beginning of the play, she stands there, she looks out at us, the audience, and tells us who she is. So it's very easy to get in there. I don't know about you, but sometimes if I go to a Shakespeare or a Greek play that I don't know very well, and I'm thinking, oh gosh, I haven't worked out who everyone is, I'm a bit lost. With this, it's instant, and you're drawn in, and it's sort of got twists and turns. There are three big twists that I'm not going to tell you about, but they're kind of unexpected. And she asks him, kind of towards the end of the play, to do the unaskable.
And it's done brilliantly, right? It was in Edinburgh, wasn't it?
It was
a huge
yeah.
run there.
Yeah, yeah, it was a huge success. It was just really special, and audiences just seemed to love it, really, for that kind of storytelling quality, really.
And of course, the acting bug continues, because I've been lucky enough to interview your daughter Megan, and you've got another daughter.
Kitty?
Where do you live now? Do you live?
We live in West Cork, just west of Skibbereen.
Lucky you.
I mean, it is gorgeous. And we live on the banks of the Island River. So it's a beautiful spot. We moved there basically to bring up the kids because we thought safer, nicer. There are things that you can do for free, the swimming, the boating, the all of that. And I think the girls loved it. Maybe when they were 14 or 15, they wished they were in the city so they could go off on their own rather than having to be driven places. But now that they're that bit older, they love coming home and love the kind of peace and calm of it all.
Well, look, Paura Cusack, lovely to chat to you this morning. The Sound Inside, which is this play you are producing, it's by Adam Rapp. It's going to be in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival from the 24th of September to the 5th of October. All info and tickets available on paviliontheatre.ie. Thanks so much for being my guest this morning.
Thank you, Maureen. It's been absolutely lovely.
Thank you so much. We'll take a break.